Hello, everybody. Welcome back to our podcast, The Bikini and the Brain.
Da da da.
Da da da. So today we're going to cover a topic that is frustrating for a lot of people. And it's the good old question, why aren't I seeing results? You know, I think a lot of times we don't realize the mistakes that we could be making throughout our day, in our training regimen, in our diet, that can be prohibiting us from losing that weight.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think some of the most, I guess, heartfelt and kind of ones that I feel sad about, emails that I get from people is like, hey, Adam, I've been doing this diet for whatever, 2-3 months. I'm working really hard. I promise I'm not cheating. Why aren't I seeing results? And it's just like general inquiry I'll get from someone of like just trying to figure out what the heck is going on, mm-hmm. you know? And so hopefully today we can answer some of those questions and get you out of a plateau if you're stuck, or help you from avoiding getting one in the first place. So with that being said, we will jump right into
jumping
it.
Jumping right into it.
Like a warm pool on a
yes,
hot day.
I'm
or
diving.
A cold pool? Cold pool on a hot day?
Yeah.
I don't like cold pools.
Well, they can be refreshing sometimes, you know.
I have to ease in.
Okay, that's a good point.
I'm a stepper, one step at a
time. Okay, that makes sense with the arm floaties and everything.
Yeah.
Gotcha. So I do think that a lot of times everyone has a good intentions. Like they think they're doing the right things. They're really giving it a lot of effort, but they're just frustrated because the scale isn't moving. They're not seeing any progress whatsoever. And, you know, I think the biggest reason is we don't know our true resting metabolic rate. When I was in school, it was taught in health class like, oh yeah, 2,000 calories, that's how much everyone burns every day kind of thing. And as I'm older and wiser, I do now realize it differs so much. And you mentioned you had a client once that their resting metabolic rate was 600. Right? And then another client of yours, well, I'm sorry, not a client, but before they came to you.
Yeah.
No, you didn't do that. Sorry, to clarify. Before they came to you, you tested their resting metabolic rate and it was 600. And then you had another person have 2,800. And these are both females. So that right there tells you there is quite a difference in the resting metabolic rate. And what are some of the reasons why there is such a big difference?
Yeah. So The person with a really low resting metabolic rate was an excessive dieter for years and years and years and extremely restrictive calories.
Mm-hmm.
So in order to get their metabolic rate up to full speed,
mm-hmm.
They needed to go through a process of like, you know, in that scenario, actually was slowly introducing calories back in because it was mm-hmm. so low. So that's not typically the process of how we'll do things, but needing that information on an extreme case like that was mm-hmm. the case. And then on the other one, which was actually surprising to me, was a girl I was working with, and every week she was making decent progress and she was like, I'm so hungry. And I'm like, how are you hungry? You're eating like really like pretty decent calories mm-hmm. considering you're on a diet. Like she was eating like around 2,000 plus calories and she was small. She was like, I want to say 130 pounds or so.
Uh-huh.
And so that's a lot of calories for someone who's on like a diet, you
mm-hmm.
know? And I was like, you know what, let's just test your metabolism one day and let's just see what it was. And she was at 2888.
Ooh, lucky individual.
Crazy. It's so, that's an extreme.
Yeah.
And so when you take 2888 or 86, whatever it was, and then you add in her normal workouts and her cardio that she's doing on top of it, you know, she's burning probably, with her walking around every day,
mm-hmm.
she's probably burning close to 4,000 calories a day. You know, it's mm-hmm. and so when she is eating, you know, 2,000, 2,200 calories. Yeah, I get why she was hungry, you know, so it made a lot of sense. But it's weird, it's more times than not when someone checks in and then they make a weekly progress,
mm-hmm.
like I can kind of figure out what their metabolic rate is because it won't be, you'll know right away because they'll lose like way too much weight if they're in like a, like that girl, she should have been losing a lot because she mm-hmm. was in like a 1,800 calorie deficit. But she wasn't losing more than the norm. She was just like, I'm starving. I'm like, let's just figure out what's going on. And what's crazy is we actually raised her calories up to still be in a caloric deficit, and then she was full, and then she actually kept losing the same amount. So like weird things happen with the body where you can't explain because
right.
she should have lost, you know, 2,000 calories a day, which would have been like 2 pounds of pure fat a week,
uh-huh.
but she didn't.
So you're saying that not necessarily is the deduction of calories, but there's other factors that kind of determine weight loss as well.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, you can diet too hard and then slow down a whole bunch of internal processes in your system. So when you're dieting really hard or you're dieting for long periods, you know, it's normal that your hormone levels will kind of start slowing. Your body's trying to preserve itself. So your thyroid hormone is going to be producing less. There's like a T3 to T4 thyroid hormone conversion happens at a lower level. Cortisol levels rise. All these different things are happening. You're hungrier, you know, everything's happening internally that can actually cause you to kind of slow in the process of leaning up.
Very interesting. Yeah. So less isn't always more in the sense of weight loss.
Absolutely not. Ah. Yeah. Because the body's going to try to adapt to it. You know, you got to remember, and I always like try to bring it back to like being real because we're used to just walking to the refrigerator and getting food, you know, and you got to remember like, even recently as 100 years ago, which is like, you know, it was funny, Joe Rogan said this. I think it was Joe Rogan said this. He was like, you got to understand, like, the humans aren't evolved that way. Humans live like 80 years. So 100 years ago was like one people. Like, it's like you're evolved like one person, like over, you know? So you got to remember, like, two people ago, you know, it was 160 years or so, right, of evolution from person to person, that type of thing. Obviously, there's more generations in between that, but it's like a funny, it just makes it real, you know?
Right.
So two people ago, basically, we were not knowing when we were going to eat. We were stuck, you know, in houses that didn't have air conditioning and heaters and refrigerators, and we didn't have fresh food sources. So the body is still used to basically preserving itself, you know, because it doesn't know when it's going to eat. You know, if you got snowed in, you know, 100 years ago, you were snowed in. There was nothing you could do about it. There wasn't street sweepers that were, you know, plowing the roads so you can get out. There wasn't fresh food that you can pick from. Your food went bad and, you know, really quickly because you didn't have, you know, refrigerators and things like that to keep all this food fresh. So, like, you were pretty screwed back then. You know, you had to just wait. And, you know, so because we don't know when, our body's not trained to know we can eat food all the time, it does this natural slowing and preservation thing. And in our modern age, we don't really think about that. And that is what happens when you restrict your calories so much. The body's like, oh, we're going through extreme hunger again. We better slow down everything. So it slows everything down.
Ah, and makes sense.
Yeah, and it just trying to, all the body wants to do is live. That's
all the body wants to do is keep you alive. God bless.
Yeah, like we want to be ripped and jacked and tan, right? But the body
does.
The body wants nothing to do with that. It's completely.
They're like, F this.
Yeah.
F this. You want abs? I don't think so, bro.
Yeah.
I don't think so.
When you are like lean and jacked, that is the body's most vulnerable state. Mm-hmm. So when you have a lot of muscle, you burn a lot of calories. So muscle burns a lot of calories. When you have a little bit of fat, well, you have very little energy reserves. So you're in a very vulnerable state for surviving, and that is completely counterintuitive to how we're designed. So that being said, you have to think about, like, you know, kind of tricking the body into not going through these extremes, or else it'll slow down on you, you know?
That makes sense, you know? And just to clarify, resting metabolic rate is the amount of calories you burn every day just on a relaxed day, like a Netflix and chill kind of day, correct?
Yeah, that's them basically you at rest.
So that's not after intense workouts. That's not like after an hour in the gym. No, that's just like a rest day. And I actually did get my resting metabolic rate tested at the Contest Prep Center. And I personally was, I guess, surprised and a little happy about mine. Mine was 1500. And the reason why I was a little surprised is because I have dieted a lot in my career. You know, I've been competing since 2012. I took 1 year off, but, you know, that's a lot of preps. I don't even know how many shows I did.
Yeah.
I have not even sat down and counted how many shows. I know, like, I could probably easily count out how many pro shows I did, but if we add in the amateur shows, that's a lot. Wow. So I guess I was rather happy with that. It's kind of an average resting metabolic rate, correct, for a woman?
Yeah, actually, surprisingly, yeah.
Yeah. So if I didn't go through all these diets over and over, like before I met you, you know, in my early career, then it probably would have been a little bit higher. And the reason why is because your body adapts, like you mentioned.
Yeah.
So every time you diet, you're kind of raising... you're lowering your resting metabolic rate every time you diet, right?
Yeah, you're basically, the farther you get into a diet, the more your body's adapting into that diet. So if you go through and you go through like a corrective process after that, and that's why I don't like to call it like reverse dieting, I like calling it like a post-show diet or a correctional diet. then you should be able to reverse most of those effects. And as long as you're doing it like as often as you're dieting, you should be good. As long as you're eating as often as you're dieting, you shouldn't have any of these like major adaptions long term.
Yes. So that's, with that being said, just to stress, the off season is very important for such reasons as that.
Oh, absolutely. Because it's going to get your hormones back up. It's going to do a whole bunch of things for you in that, to be healthy. And that's really what the goal of this is to be looking awesome, but also being healthy and looking awesome. So,
do you know your resting metabolic rate? Have you tested it?
Yeah, yeah. It's,
what is yours?
It's 19 something.
I would have expected yours to be higher. Yeah, you got so much muscles.
When I was like on the floor training though, before, when I was like actually more physically training, I was at 24-50 something though, so that was pretty good for a guy.
Yeah
because that means that, and that, it doesn't sound like much, but you gotta remember that's not consuming calories. That's me at 24-50 something and then working a day of work where I was like training like 8 sessions a day. That would be me burning like 4,000 calories before I even worked out.
Wowzers.
And so it'd be like, yeah, you'd have to eat like 5,000 calories to gain.
Holy moly.
It was crazy. Yeah. Now it's a little easier because I'm more sedentary doing computer programs and stuff. But yeah, so it is important. You don't need to test your metabolic rate. A lot of the times it's just you eat a certain number of calories. And that's why I'm big on sticking to a diet, is you eat a certain number of calories. And then based on how you responded that week, how much you lost, you can generally figure it out.
Right. So if somebody's cheating on their diet and snacking and not really telling their coach doesn't have any clue what their true metabolic rate is and how much calories they're burning, because it's inaccurate because of these little extra calories coming in. They don't know about it.
Exactly. Yeah. It's like impossible. And that's what I tell people too. I get a lot of questions on like cheat meals. I'll get that all the time. How can I have a cheat meal? When can I have a cheat meal? This and that. And so I never give someone like a cheat meal. We went over this before too.
Right.
Like in a cheat meal in its normal form. Like I won't say, hey, just have a crazy cheat. We'll say, hey, have a cheat meal that is 1,200 calories. And then that way I can use still the total weekly collective data of calories and reference it to their weekly progress.
Makes sense. And I think the great thing now is a lot of restaurants have that calorie count on it.
Yeah.
Like Cheesecake Factory will tell you how many calories are in this burger. I think that's super helpful.
Yeah. The Skinnylicious enchilada at the Cheesecake Factory is my jam.
You're going to make me hungry.
It actually sounds so good right now. It's like, that's like the best thing ever. I love that thing.
Oh gosh.
So one of the, actually what's funny is in preparation for this podcast, particularly, we're looking at people who were, there's a new study that came out, and it was basically people that were eating under 1,200 calories that weren't losing weight, and why was the reason that they weren't losing weight, right? And so I was like, oh wow, this is going to be cool. This is a perfect thing to reference.
Yeah.
And we even like waited a day for it. And then when I like read more about it, it actually was that the people, it was, the study was more about people under-reporting their calories they consume.
Oh, isn't that, this is just how life is though, isn't it?
It's totally, yeah.
Just so like clients will probably under-report.
I was like, oh cool, someone's like figured this out, because this happens all the time. Like people will eat such low calories and not see results. And no one really knows like what's actually happening, why is this not working to some degree? Like it should always, you shouldn't adapt that much where you're eating, you know, 1,000 calories, you're not seeing any results, but it happens, you know?
Yeah. So it's like, so it's basically a study that people cheat on their diet, and that's a real thing.
Yeah, so we're always looking for new stuff.
Oh,
so
yeah.
I get, I actually subscribe to like this thing where I get research every month on stuff.
See, and, he's not just making it up. He researches.
Yeah, it's important. It's important these days.
It is.
You know? And, you know, I always try to give you guys research stuff if I can. And a lot of it, well, what I'll give you too is like, stuff that we've learned just from experience too, which I think is cool to do both, because it is important. Not everything will be researched.
You know, I think we have a great dynamic here. You are definitely the brain, and I kind of give my perspective as an athlete and the things I go through. So it's a great little mix here we got going.
Yeah, and it's weird. That's the thing. That's the thing about bodybuilding is like, you know, there's always like, there's like the science guy side, and then there's the other guy's side, the bodybuilder side, and they just, sometimes the bodybuilders figure it out before the science does, you know, just,
oh, that happens. Will never happen with me and you. You'll always figure it out first. But I still look better in a bikini, so whatever.
Whatever.
You know I win.
All that matters is you're looking good in the bikini.
Exactly.
All right.
So I think the second most common reason why people aren't really losing the weight they want to, we kind of went over it a little bit with your study, is not really accounting for those extra little snacks, those extra little calories, condiments, little creamers you put in your coffee, whatever it may be. And if you really take a step back and realize that, man, how much is this adding up to? Like, you don't think about it, but hey, here's a few tablespoons of half and half for the coffee. Here's some who knows, like some sort of condiment, ketchup or something for your food. And that stuff, it really adds up over time. And if you look at it in the grand scheme of things, if you hold this bottle of ketchup and you're like, yeah, I went through this in a month, and then add up all those tablespoons that are in the bottle and see how many calories that actually is. So although it might not seem like a lot that day, when it adds up, you could have been like, dang, man, that's like hours of cardio. This bottle of ketchup is hours of cardio.
Right.
You know? Yeah. And I think another thing people don't realize, and I didn't even realize it until you told me, that nutrition labels are technically allowed to be, what, 20% off?
It's like, I think they've been, I think the allowed is, now don't quote me on it, but I think it's don't around 10%.
10%.
Is the allowed, but they've seen labels being up to like 17% off, which
is crazy.
Yeah,
and you don't really even know. And if you think about it, do we really know how much unless we take it to a lab and burn the food, which is, I guess, how you get the calorie intake of a food, right? You burn it, like they do it in a lab and see how long it burns for, and that's how many calories that product
has. It's something around there,
so
yeah.
So how do we really know, like this piece of, let's say, coffee cake that you get, I mean, how do we know?
Yeah.
Like, we gotta burn it to find out.
Yeah, exactly.
So just keep that into consideration as well.
Yeah, so that's the thing, especially with, and that's probably like one of my main reasons why I'm not a big like macro guy, because the macro diet's gotten so loose where you can go out and eat foods from fast food places and whatnot, and those foods are notoriously off, because you got to remember who's cooking the food and who's doing what. Like, it's just some high school kid who's like, he's not a chef.
They're probably not weighing your food precisely on a scale like we are.
Yeah, it might fry for longer, might have more oil this time than last time.
You might have three extra fries.
Yeah, exactly. It's totally different. It's totally different from person to person. So yeah. It's like, that's why I'm not a huge fan of it, because we're about like data collection and then checking your weekly check-in to see how much progress was made after that data was collected. But you need that data. So so one of the things that I know is a big thing is what Ashley's saying is like just nibbling on foods.
Yes.
And I think moms have it the worst. I hear about it the most from moms.
Oh, I can only imagine.
Because they have their kids have all these little snacks or whatever, and they'll have like one thing here and one thing there. So what are some of the things, like, I guess for people who are struggling with this, because this is about also why am I not seeing results and a solution, what kind of suggestions do you have in terms of like those things?
I would say don't keep that stuff in the house if you can. Like, I understand some people have kids and that is part of the problem, but if you have any control over it, you know, keep it out of sight. They say out of sight, out of mind. Even for me, my boyfriend, when he uses peanut butter in the shakes, I'm like, just put the peanut butter upstairs in your room and hide it and don't tell me where it's at when I'm close to a show, because I know that for me is like a tricky one, because I'll lick the edge of the peanut butter and just, you know, a little here, a little there. And that kind of stuff really adds up, because, gosh, peanut butter is so dense in calories, yeah?
It's super dense, yeah.
That peanut butter, man, I was talking about ketchup, but shoot, peanut butter, that'll ruin a diet.
Yeah. And peanut butter is not a protein, guys. Like, whoever says, everyone's like, oh, I need protein from, it's a fat and then a protein.
Yeah. So, it's not like, which, I mean, fat isn't necessarily bad for you or anything, but it is very, very easy to go overboard on the peanut butter.
Very easy, yeah. Yikes. Especially like when you're doing like a tablespoon measurement and it's like a heaping tablespoon. And it's like,
I have to, when I do have peanut butter, right, and it's on my diet, I get the packets of like 100 calories, because it's like, okay, I open it and that's all I get in here.
Yeah,
so exactly. I can't go back for more. So I guess that's a good tip for you guys out there. If you can buy individually wrapped or proportioned already items that you know that you're at risk of snacking on, that's also very helpful.
One of the things that, actually, we did a video on, a YouTube video on, with some of your snacks too, that was really good.
Yeah.
Those were really helpful.
The healthy snacks.
Those were really helpful. One of my favorite one was it called Smarties?
Smart cakes.
Smart cakes, and then the fish one.
Oh, Smart Sweets.
Smart Sweets,
yeah,
okay.
Those are so good.
Those are my two favorite.
The fishies, yeah.
The Smart Cake was delicious, and that was like 40 calories.
38 to be technical.
And then the fishes, I actually get those on Amazon delivery now, like monthly reoccurrence.
I can't wait to have them.
I get 12 a month, 12 packs a month. Those things are delicious. They're so good.
They're very fibrous.
Yeah. So some of the things that help you with like your calories and whatnot, those things. One of the other things is spices. Like, go to a spice store.
Yes,
and
spices.
Load up on spices. Make
I went and loaded up on the spice shop in Denver. Adam took me there, and I had a ball in there, and I spent like over $100.
You spent $200 and some bucks.
Oh, did I? Shoot.
Yeah,
dang.
You really went
I was
for it.
Bawling in the seasoning store.
You were, what do you say, bawling? Like, They can
making
get rain.
It rain and seasonings.
They can get rain spices and seasonings. Yeah, that was a crazy
That's
run.
A very helpful tip.
Yeah, because most of them are calorie free.
Yes.
If any, it's very, very low. And then some of the other things that people don't, I think about is one, we kind of went over it before, but there's the sweeteners, the sweetener packets.
Yes. Oh, they can be tricky.
Yeah, about 2 carbs or so per about I think it's like eight, anywhere between 4 and 8 grams of sugar, is it right? No, 2 grams of sugar, sorry, in each little packet.
See, that's something they're not going to tell you. So buy the Pureform.
Yeah, so
Amazon.
Yeah, the Pureform of that. The other thing, too, is cooking spray.
Cooking spray. That's
sneaky.
A good point, too. Yes.
So
because
sneaky.
If people somehow think that, like, just because it's in an aerosol can, that it's, like, calorie-free. Well, also probably because the nutrition label literally says zero
it's
calories.
It's so deceiving.
But that's, like, 1/8 of a spray. Do you use 1/8 of a spray? I can't even spray 1/8.
Yeah.
That's like a piece of air and 2 molecules. I don't know. it can add up though.
The cooking spray one's really tricky because that's one of the things. You're allowed a variance on calories. You don't need to be exactly right on calories, and some of these companies will take advantage of it. So like some of those like 100 calorie snacks that you see out there, you know, some of them might be 110.
Don't tell them that.
Calories.
I just told them to get it.
Well, like, but you know, it's if you could do the math on it, if you look at like the label of the real one and then you see the weight. But the cooking spray is a perfect example of that because it says 0 calories on it. So how is olive oil in its container, whatever, 100 calories in a tablespoon when you use a tablespoon, but in a cooking spray is now it's 0 calories, you know? So it's obviously that's not the case, but it's like they even say it's like one, whatever, 1/100 of a second spray. Like, that's so fast. You know, everyone uses like a 2-second spray.
Yeah.
So, yeah, there is calories
it's
in that.
It's probably the amount you breathe when you spray it.
Right? I don't even know if you could, like, you have to, like, tap it real quick. I don't know how you'd even
have to
do that. So, all right, so some of the little things that calories can add up, and that could be the reason.
Mm-hmm.
And I think a lot of the reason, too, could be you're just, you know, dieting too hard and your body's adapting too fast because you went too crazy with it.
Yep, that's very important and that is very real. So that's why it's important also to take those little breaks like you mentioned to get that calorie back up whenever you're finished with your season.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, and that's the thing when you're, I think especially too, is a lot of our listeners are going to be, you know, American and they're Westerners. And they're, I think as like a culture, we're like so 100% or nothing, or want results now, you know,
Or
nothing,
like,
you know?
No patience whatsoever.
Yeah, and that's where you see all these ads making millions, you know, it's a 30-minute abs, or that's like 5-minute abs, right? And like 30 days, 30 pounds in 30 days, and that type
these
of thing.
These keywords, man, they get you. And even like the labels on the food, like people think because it says like, what, all natural, or vegan, or sugar-free, or zero trans fat or organic, that it's automatically healthy, and that is not the case. Like, even Whole Foods, you know, has all natural items, but you know, you could still get fat off of Whole Foods.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and with the with the label reporting and all that stuff that we kind of went into, just the main thing is just being careful and use common sense.
Yes.
You know, with that. Now, with the whole like 30 days and 30 pounds and all this stuff, we want results now, but the problem is like, you're gonna pay for it one way or the other. There's never a give without a take. So if you go right into your diet super hardcore and let's say you do really good for the first 30 days, well, you know, your body's gonna adapt, and then where do you go from there? You know, you're stuck at those low calories, and the only option is to go harder than that, you know, to get more results once your body adapts.
It's a slippery slope.
Yeah, and that's the problem I run into a lot more than anything. And I tell people when they come to me, the best scenario when someone comes to me is if they haven't really done any cardio, they're eating good calories, and then now we have a good starting point to start with. Now, people who do really low calories and really excessive cardio, they're so adapted, they're so adapted that it's actually difficult to make any progress because now we have to, in order to make progress, we have to do more than what they are doing than their adapted state, or we have to reset, go through a correctional period, and then start dieting, you know? So it's kind of like people don't understand, like, there's this thing called like diet age. So there's like a workout age and there's a diet age. And you're basically, your diet age is how long you've been dieting and how many accumulative years and diets you've been through without correcting it. And then your workout age is, as everyone knows, like your first year of working out, you could put on so much more muscle than your third, fourth year of working out, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And so that's your workout age, right? But the same thing happens with diets and people don't really think about that.
I remember my first diet, Adam, and it was really easy. Oh, yeah. It's so smooth. As is for everyone.
Yeah, it's so smooth.
Yeah, and if it was only like that now.
And you run into these people who are like, who actually do try really hard to diet. Yeah. And as, even sometimes some of the like the really, really bigger people, like really obese people, they'll say, I dieted my whole life and I've tried and nothing works. And at a certain point, it's kind of believable, you know, because they've dieted so hard that their body, as soon as they start dieting, recognizes they're dieting hard again.
Probably a lot of crash diets.
Yeah, it becomes hard and then they rebound right after. And it's an ongoing process. They have to go through the whole correctional process to make it actually last.
Right. And so, the thing about crash dieting too and dieting very quick is like you can only tolerate mentally so much.
Yeah.
Not only your body, but mentally. And then whenever you do have access to foods or a cheat meal or just want to eat normally, you know, for the weekend, then it tends to be that the person that just goes ham and just can't even control themselves because their body was like craving that much food.
Yeah, for sure. And that's probably one of the, another whole other topic, rebounding that we can go into after.
Wait, we will make a podcast for it. Don't
that's a good one. I think.
Don't you worry.
I think it warrants a podcast. Yeah.
Yeah.
So go ahead along with that. What else, what other things do we have here?
You know, I think that one of the reasons why people aren't seeing results is maybe they're not really pushing themselves as hard as they should be in the gym because just like with diets, you know, you kind of get used to workouts and then you become adapted. And then suddenly when you're doing 20 minutes on the step mill, it becomes less of a challenge and less and less. And they don't really increase their intensity. So they're just going through the motions and it's easy for them, but they don't really realize it. Maybe they're distracted or maybe they just think that's how it's supposed to be. But you should always be pushing yourself. So when something does become easy, then you go harder, you know? So if you're doing 20 minutes on the step mill at level 8 and it's becoming easy and at the end you're like, wow, this is nothing. The next time, you know, go to level 9 and then 10. And that's another thing too, guys. It's really not a good thing to become too good at cardio for losing weight. And I know a lot of people are like, what? But if you think about it, if I run a mile versus maybe a marathoner that runs a mile, although I'm in shape, they are way more in shape than I am. I'm going to burn more calories than the marathoner because the marathoner is like, this is nothing, you know, considering if we go at the same speed, same intensity. So they're just going to be like, oh, this is nothing, you know? They might not even get out of breath, but I might be a little bit like, so I will burn more calories in that case. So a lot of people don't realize that in order to like counteract that, you have to increase your cardio or do a different style of cardio or just like cut back for a little bit or whatever your coach tells you to do.
Yeah. And that goes into, actually, that's really cool. Really cool stuff you just dove into there. So there's this thing called the FIT principle, and it has to do with cardio. And that is your frequency, your intensity, time, and type. So FITT, FIT principle, frequency, intensity, time, and type. So as long as something of one of those things is changing, you shouldn't be adapting so easily. So if you're in a plateau and your body's adapting, follow the FIT principle, change your frequency, change your intensity, change your time, and change your type.
Mm-hmm.
Not all at the same time. Save one and you do one each.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the cool things about cardio, HIIT cardio specifically, is that HIIT cardio has a really positive effect on metabolism for a period of time after cardio. But what I like about HIIT cardio the most is that it naturally follows the FIT principle just on your own body's performance. So when we start doing HIIT cardio, we'll say, okay, do 15 minutes of cardio, HIIT cardio, and do as hard as you can safely until you fail and then recover. And then do it again. And so we do it, you know, you start off and you're failing at 30 seconds, and your recovery is like 90 seconds. It's like, it's because you're not good at it yet. But as you start progressing through it and you start getting better, well, all of a sudden now you're going, doing a HIIT for 35 seconds and your recovery now is 60 seconds. And then it goes down to 45. And now you're doing HIIT longer than you're resting because you're resting and you're getting better at it. And so it's naturally, it just naturally is following the FIT principle because it's increasing your intensity of your HIIT cardio because you're getting better. So that's the thing you don't do with steady state. You don't you get better at it, but you're not increasing like your intensity. You're just kind of always doing the same thing, you know, doing the same thing. So one of the things I think too is how Ashley talked on that topic is you do adapt to cardio. You do get better at performing cardio, you know, and that's why you can't just wake up and run a marathon, you know, and then after months and months of training, you can do a marathon. And so because you got better at it, you know, your body naturally, you're more efficient at it. You're more stabilized while doing at it. And yes, at the end, you'll burn less calories because you're so efficient at that movement now. you're not as wobbly, you're more stable, you're just doing it more efficiently, you're mm-hmm. breathing easier, your body's more designed for it now. So because you've been training red muscle fibers and things like that. So mm-hmm. so changing it up is super important.
Yes. You know something, Adam? You taught me something very important last year, and I was guilty of this for a long time. When we were trying to figure out, which we will get into later, why I wasn't losing weight, one of the things Adam asked me was, what about, you know, meat? And I'll let you explain part, but I guess I'm one of those people that really like to relax sometimes after a workout, and sometimes maybe that's not the best thing to do the entire day. So I'll let you explain what this word means. It's called NEAT. Do you know what it stands for? Is it just...
Yeah, I do. It's neato.
Neato?
No, that's just... It's a neato... It's a neato, like a neato topic.
Okay, gotcha.
Neat is neato.
Neat is neato.
So neat... And this is really cool. So NEAT stands for non-exercise-induced... non-exercise activity-induced thermogenesis. When I say it slow, I can say it fast and get it right every time. So basically what that means is when you're walking around, when you're cleaning your house, when you're doing anything at all that is non-exercise-based activity-induced thermogenesis. So basically anything you'd burn calories at and increasing calories through activities that you do. What's really funny, or I guess I wouldn't say funny, really sad, is that a lot of times when people do shows and they're doing so hard in mm-hmm. cardio and they're doing like steady state cardio and they're burning, let's say 500 calories in their first session a day and they're burning another 500 calories in their second session a day doing cardio and they get home and they don't move.
Yeah.
Well, that same person used to burn, 800 calories a day just walking around, cleaning mm-hmm. the house, doing things, but they're just at home now.
So they were better off being productive around the house running errands.
Yeah, yes. If they were just burning, 200 calories in the gym doing cardio and then doing all their errands, it would have been the same exact effect.
Yes, and way more productive.
Way more productive, yeah. So when you're doing steady state cardio, and people don't really understand this, it has zero effect on your metabolism. Steady state cardio is just not something that is going to increase your metabolism because it's not hard enough. It doesn't require, this thing called EPOC, which is another term. So it's called excess post-exercise oxygen consumption, is EPOC. And what that is basically the rate of how much oxygen your body's consuming mm-hmm. after a workout. And the harder the workout, the more oxygen you consume to recover from that workout. So with steady state cardio, you don't kind of elevate that. It's just kind of moving throughout the day like you were mm-hmm. walking. So it doesn't increase your metabolism. So if something's not increasing your metabolism and you can get more effect from just walking around and doing things outside and shopping, going grocery shopping, cleaning mm-hmm. the house, like it's better to just, really it's the same to just do that.
Right. And maybe more enjoyable and more fun, you know?
Yeah. And I have some people, especially like nurses, where we do like total weekly steps instead mm-hmm. of cardio for that reason.
Oh, yeah. Because they're always on their feet, moving.
Yeah, these nurses, they walk around quite a bit.
Yeah.
We'll do we do like a weekly target of like 90,000 steps sometimes on some of them. It's like, mm-hmm. and they're like, well, I'll do some cardio in the gym and then 3 days a week they work 12s and I don't want to have them do cardio as well as their workouts
miserable.
And then as well as they're walking around. So mm-hmm. we have to figure it out. We don't want to overload them. So yeah, they count steps, which is an option.
Yes.
Talk to your trainer if that's something that you want to do.
Mm-hmm. Or if you're on vacation, guys, if you're going to be walking around and, sightseeing and you're going to be on your feet all day, maybe you don't have to do cardio. Don't ruin your vacation.
Yeah.
But that's all depending on your own goals and if you're prepping for a show and what have you. But, it's okay to relax a little bit and enjoy.
Yeah, but mm-hmm. Real quickly, back to the knee, because I got off topic there. But if you are doing so much work in the gym where all you're doing is laying around the house and now all of a sudden you're not getting results,
mm-hmm.
well, maybe rethink that whole thing and see what's better. Get actually being productive in society versus just sitting on the couch or doing your cardio, So there's a balance in between there where one makes more sense than the other.
And you can, make it work too with cardio. I mean, once you kind of brought it to my attention, after cardio, I didn't just lay around the house all day watching Netflix. I was like, all right, you know what? I'm going to be productive and I'm going to go outside. I'm going to walk to the store. So I just kind of kept that in the back of my mind.
Yeah.
And it did seem to help as well.
Yeah, because you're naturally just burning more calories mm-hmm. With that stuff. So,
yes.
So I think there's a couple more on our list here.
Yeah, there's a few more. I think getting enough sleep is very important.
It's super big.
Because a lot of people don't realize your muscles, don't grow when you're actually up and at it. They grow when you're resting. That's when your body recovers and can use all those calories you had or whatever to recover your body. So when you don't have enough sleep, first off, it's gonna affect your mood. You're not gonna be as motivated. You're not gonna have as much energy to do these workouts or walk around or whatever it may be. And you're just gonna be not getting the best result if you're not sleeping enough.
Yeah, there's a lot of different reasons for that, but this recovery specifically is one of them. Your hormone production is one of them. Your elevation in cortisol is another one. So there's a whole bunch of different reasons why that's one of the critical things. And actually, what's really funny is when I have people getting ready for shows, one of the things that if all of a sudden they're like looking a little softer for no reason at all, I'm like, how much sleep are you getting? And a lot of times, like, oh, last week was rough. Like, last week I just didn't have that much sleep because of this and that. Mm-hmm. And then I'm like, this week just take like 2 naps, 3 naps, and let's see what happens next week. Right. And they're like, a lot of times everything's like, this looks dramatically better the next week. And I'm like, yeah, that was it. I'm like, yeah, it's a huge, huge part of this is recovery process is so big. So that being said, another topic since we kind of went into it was like the hormones that are with that. And I think this leads into another one. There's two topics here. I think one of them is age. I think people are like really, as soon as I turned 30 or as soon as I turned 40, whatever, you know, I wasn't getting results. So so I want to go into, first we'll go into the hormone one, but.
Let me just say this first before you start. I didn't mention this yet in the podcast. You know this, a lot of people listening know this, but maybe somebody doesn't. I don't weigh myself because it's mental. It plays games with my mind, okay? Yeah. Not that I ever think I'm fat. I don't think, oh my God, I look so fat. No, no, no. It's more like, okay, if I'm off season, I know what my good off season weight is. And if I'm above that, I'm like, oh shoot, oh shoot. Or if I'm getting close to a show or if I'm prepping for a show and I take my weight and it's 1 month out and I already know what a good weight for me is 1 month out and it's not that number, I'm like, oh my God, I'm behind. Yeah. And then I kind of stress myself out. So I don't personally weigh myself. And I think sometimes it can be deceiving as well. Before you get into the topic of hormones, I just want to say like females, our weights fluctuate a lot more than guys. Okay. Yeah. And some things we can't control, like our time of month, you might feel a little more bloated. You might put on a few pounds and you know, that could be the reason. It's just your body is, you know, doing its thing. So try not to stress too much if you see little small fluctuations around that time of month, that's okay. You know, it's kind of unavoidable.
Yeah, for sure. And yeah, that's the thing is if all of a sudden you gained like 5 pounds 1 week and you're eating the same diet, like just usually you just give yourself a week to see what happens, get some sleep, and then usually the next week it just goes right away, especially with like time of the month things like that. So into the hormone thing, more times than not, and they had this, more times than not, people will think there's something hormonally happening when it's one of the other reasons, when it's like their food is just a little bit off.
Yeah, that's like the last resort, I guess, of why it's happening.
Yeah, it's their food's a little off, they're not working out as hard as they said they were. Mm-hmm. And this happens a lot of times too, like people will think they're working out hard or just say they're working out hard. And really they're like, man, this workout, every time I work out, it's taking me 2 hours. Why is it taking me 2 hours? And I'm like, your workout's designed to be 50 minutes. Yeah. How are you spending 2 hours
too
doing
this?
Too much
rest period. Yeah.
I'm like,
too much texting in between.
Yeah, and I'm like looking at their workouts and I'm like, no, your workout is exactly 16 sets. Each set takes 45, 50 seconds. Your rest periods are 45 to a minute. How are you spending 2 hours in the gym? Because what are you doing? You know, so like, and then they're like, oh, yeah, actually, I don't know how I was spending. I'm like, it doesn't make any sense. It's on paper. Like, how does it make any sense? You know, so like they weren't working out hard enough. They're just kind of sitting around. And then, you know, in the end, let's say you're doing everything right. Everything's perfect. It could, yeah, there could be something hormonally happening and you can get that tested pretty easily these days just to alleviate that as as one of those possibilities.
You know? And in order to test, I don't think a lot of people know exactly how to test or where to go. I know that at the Contest Prep Center, you have that service available through the doctor that's in-house.
Yeah.
But if there isn't any Contest Prep Center near, because they're probably not, because it's the only one in the world. if you don't go to Denver and see Adam, an endocrinologist, correct, is what you would call the person that analyzes your hormones and you can get your blood test.
You can do it there. Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. And then endocrinologist.
They have, yeah, and they have, so these specialists, these like, and I want to say like, how would we say, a hormone specialist or anti-aging hormone specialist, that type of thing. They are kind of everywhere now. There's a lot of them. There's a lot of them, but there's
the
very
best
few,
ones at the contest prep center.
Yeah, there's very few that are like bodybuilding specific. Most are anti-aging specific, not like bodybuilding specific. Ours are bodybuilding specific, but we can actually have. So if you're, let's say you're in Tennessee or something, we're in Denver, you can actually contact our doctors and they can send you to a lab in your area and they can talk to you on the phone through it and actually figure out
so
your hormones.
That's so helpful, yeah.
Yeah, and the main difference is like if you go to your doctor, they're going to test the basics because your insurance covers the basics.
Yes.
But they're not going to test the things that are like the second level things. So they'll test, oh yeah, they'll be like, look at your testosterone. Like, oh yeah, your testosterone's fine. And that's all they're going to say. Well, testosterone being fine can be anywhere on the chart. Like, 300 to 1100 is like considered fine for a guy in testosterone. And there's going to be a huge difference in performance between the guy who's 300 and the guy who's 1100, like a huge difference. So if you wanted to optimize that and then you get your natural levels up to 1100, there's like ways of helping you do that. You know, so there's a lot of different things they'll test, you know, it's like your thyroid, your estrogen, progesterone, your sex hormone binding globulin, your growth hormone, all these different things that they don't, a normal test wouldn't test. You can test that too. It's relatively inexpensive. I wouldn't say inexpensive, but like $300 or so to do that. So that's something you do either because you want to really figure it out or if you aren't getting results. Now, we can go into the age one, which I think is really important to talk on because the age one is one of the biggest things I get.
Hey, do you remember when you were a kid and you ate apple pies for breakfast, lunch, and dinner? And then for like dessert, you had like, I don't know, more apple pie, but you were still so skinny. Yeah. Remember those days?
That was,
Moose Tracks ice cream every day for lunch in like fourth grade. But it's so funny how like, I don't know about you, but I ate like absolute crap as a child and I was still so skinny and small.
I don't know. You know what's funny is like, I don't want to say anything about my parents, but parents really allow their kids to eat this stuff.
I can't believe it.
Like,
mom and dad, what are we thinking?
Like, I mean, they're just kind of like, oh, they just got to eat something because the kids are so like always like crying if they have to eat chicken or broccoli or whatever. But yeah, so what happens, right? What happens when you're getting older and why is it harder to keep body fat off of you? What's actually happening? So I actually, as a young trainer, I dove into this. Because, yes, as you know, I walk in slowly because it's too cold. I can't just take the leap. So I dove into this and I was like, why is it? Because when I started off training, and this is and how I recommend every trainer starting, I recommend you starting with regular health and fitness clients before you get to the higher levels of contest prep because it's way more technical and way more dangerous with the calories that we're giving people. So please be smart if you're a trainer out there and just start off the right way with clients that are just health and fitness very slowly. Anyway, that's my disclaimer, right? So how I started was I had older people. They're all like, you know, 40s, 50s, 60s years old. And they were like, yeah, when I was younger. And then at first I was like, yeah, you know, well, you're not now. So what do we do? You know
what I mean?
But I was like, there's gotta be a reason. And so I dove into it a lot and came to the conclusion with all the research that there is not a physiological reason, a physiological difference between your metabolism when you're 50 and when you're 20. There's no difference. But there was a difference on how much muscle someone kept from 20 to 30 to 40.
That makes sense.
Yeah. So
and perhaps they were a dieter at some point and maybe that affected it as well.
So there was what they found was that as you got older, you lived a more sedentary life than when Ashley was running
that
around
makes
as a kid.
Sense.
Eating apple pie.
Oh my gosh, yes.
So that was a dramatic difference, is
that
you're moving
sense.
A lot less.
You're like knitting sweaters instead of like I don't
playing
know,
tag. Yeah.
Playing tag.
Yeah.
Yes.
And then on top of that, you were actually, they found that people lost an average of, it was like, and I haven't read this study in so long, but it was an average of 2 pounds of muscle. A little bit more than 2 pounds of muscle, I want to say, but really not a lot, over every 10 years. Mm-hmm. So if they were 50 years old, they might be down 6 pounds, maybe 8 pounds of muscle, because it was like 2.6 or something like that. So now this doesn't seem like much, but you know, let's say 8 pounds of muscle, you're burning, let's say 12 calories or so per pound. It's depending on how much you move, of course, you know. Mm-hmm. And so when you couple moving less and then burning less calories because you have less muscle, you know, you might be burning, you know, 12 times 8, what is that, 96 calories, I think? 96
calories. You said you're good at math, not me.
Yeah, it's 96 calories. And so you know, less per day. So now you're burning, you know, less, almost 700 calories less per week. Mm. And that adds up over time.
It does add up. So I think that's a good wake-up call, because I think we even got some messages about, like, older competitors as well.
Yeah.
Your advice might be to try as best as you can to keep that muscle, add on to the muscle, but age isn't an excuse necessarily when it comes to metabolism.
As far as, yeah, as far as that goes, mm-hmm. no. Yeah, they've found that there's not a physiological reason. So,
okay.
And especially these days, you can control. You know, we know this information's out there. We know that if your hormones have gotten a little bit slower, you can actually control that these mm-hmm. days. You know, you can actually test them and get them back up to the levels of when you're 18 and be optimized and back mm-hmm. to back to that. So there really isn't a reason besides maybe you're moving less, and then all you need to do is move more. Gotcha. And if you have less muscle, well, get it back. You mm-hmm. know, that's the answer to that. So it's people are gonna say, oh no, Adam, you don't know. Well, I'm almost 40, but so I don't have the experience that someone who's 50 or 60 could mm-hmm. tell me. But that is the studied truth of it.
You're gonna get all these people
right,
like, you don't know how it is. You don't know what it's like. Why don't you wait till you're 75 and then come talk to me?
Isn't that our life, though?
Yeah.
Isn't that our life? So there's a couple tidbits for you.
A little tiddly bit.
Yeah. So with that being said, you know, if you're in a plateau, we talked about how to switch it up.
Yep.
If you're eating extra calories, we talked about how you can add some more variety to your foods and not mm-hmm. not get surprised by some of these calories. Mm-hmm. What else do we got, or did we cover it?
I mean, I think the last thing I would mention is if you're having digestion problems, maybe it's not necessarily, you know, fat that's causing a fluctuation in the scale, but are you backed up? Are you making regular poops? You
know? Yeah.
And I think some of that comes with, like, what kind of foods are you eating, and also do you have any food sensitivities that are causing your stomach to become irritated or inflamed, holding on to a little extra water?
Yeah, which could be confused as.
Yes, right? Which can be confused as weight or fat, but, you know, it's something to evaluate. I can't tell you an exact answer because I don't know what you look like over there in that podcast digital world.
Yeah, it's definitely something to consider. You know, eating good foods is always the best way of doing mm-hmm. things, even if you're a macro dieter. Just making sure you're staying regular, eating the right foods for your body in terms of, like, what you know, a lot of times this is intuitive too. Like, you'll eat something and the next day you feel puffy, you know?
Yeah, and you're like, what the heck was it? And
yeah.
You realize, oh, wait, I haven't had artichokes in, like, I don't know, a year. It's probably the artichokes, you know?
I had one girl, which was like, we couldn't figure it out, and uh-huh. it was crazy. It was before we had access to the testing of,
yes.
Which we would have figured it out with the testing, but before we had access, and we were like, she's eating everything clean. What mm-hmm. is causing her to just have these crazy fluctuations in weight? And it was like constant. We just kept digging and digging and digging. And we're like, you know what? She's eating cucumbers as her vegetables, like, mm-hmm. all the time. And I was like, you know what? Let's, actually, it was Sam that Reese found this one, because I was looking everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
And she's like, Adam, can we try this with her? And I was like, you know what? Let's try it. We can't. Why not? And she started peeling her cucumbers, because the cucumbers were, like, the peels were causing her, like, a lot of distress.
Wow,
and
that's crazy.
Instantly went away. Mm-hmm. And I was like, I can't believe
it
was that.
Isn't it crazy? Our bodies are so, like...
I couldn't believe it.
Delicate, I guess you would say, or so... I don't know. They can't make their minds up. But it's just so crazy how something so small...
And her waistline went down.
...can really, like, affect someone's, like, weight or their digestion.
It was crazy. Yeah.
That's insane.
Because she was doing it all the time. And then her waistline went down right away. She was more regular right away. And she was holding less water, like, right away. And I was like, I can't believe that. I was like... she must have been super sensitive to it. You know, I don't know.
Uh-huh.
So, but yeah, so anyway, so little things. So, you know, be intuitive about it. If something's really, like, one day you eat something and you're holding water, like, remember what you ate the day before that. Write it down mm-hmm. so you can figure it out. So,
yes. And also, just in closing, just to reiterate a little bit on the last part about, you know, hormone testing and stuff. If you really, in all honesty, are doing everything correctly and you're not cheating on your diet or snacking or any of the things we mentioned, I think it is super important that you at least see someone about it, because, you know, there could be an underlying health issue that you don't really know, because, you know, sometimes what's going on outside isn't really telling of what's going on inside. Even though you're doing everything right, you look okay. I mean, you don't look sick, but things aren't moving, or think the scale isn't moving. It's important, I think, because you just never know. I mean, even when I got my blood tested too, I was lacking iron, so I was anemic. And that was shocking to me because I ate red meat. I didn't really restrict anything for my diet except for seafood because it's freaking disgusting. But so I was surprised at that. But you'll never know until you get it tested. So I don't know, just something to think about if you have any doubts or any questions about things that aren't really adding up in your diet or training regimen. I would definitely suggest you should at least, you know, get it checked out, see what's going on.
Yeah, I try to recommend it for everyone. The problem is, the only problem is, you know, it's obviously it's expensive. And so that's the reason that I don't tell everyone to do it. But yeah, you know, if it's a good, it's a good investment in your, like, if you're a bodybuilder and you're serious about it, just to eliminate things and to see where you're at, you know. So anyway, with that, we will leave you.
Okay, I hate to see you guys go.
I know.
Thanks for tuning in.
Thanks so much for listening to us.
We love you.
Yeah. And we will talk to you next time.
Bye.